Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin, you're listening to Up North News.
To those of you who thought we'd never last a week, myself included, well, here we are. And good morning. It's Friday, the 5th of August. Welcome to Wisconsin's new coffee break. Later this morning, an intensely personal story about abortion and why these stories should be brought out of the shadows early and need to be shared more often before any other personal rights are stripped away in the United States. The kinds of people who would do that are the kinds of people, by the way, who won primary elections across Arizona this week. So in our next hour, we will visit with my editorial colleague from the Desert Southwest about what the heck is going on over there. And in our third hour, we will go day tripping across Wisconsin with travel writer Susan Lampert-Smith. You can reach the show at 715-388-7155. Luke Mathers is here with me, which in and of itself is also a pretty big deal. I did not expect he would stick around for the full week either, but here he is. So if my story about getting fluid drained out of my knee didn't chase him away, I guess is that this is where you're going to find him in the mornings now, hanging out here. Got enough caffeine there for this?
I hope I have enough caffeine here for this. It's by Friday. It's a little bit more lagging, so I'm here regardless, Pat. It's just thrilled that I'm joined by you now from 8 to 11 here. Because normally I'm in this production booth just cranking out a bunch of other things, but now I get to work on those things and have a great conversation with you and help put out this show on Bull Falls Radio and all across up north.
So what you're saying is you're earning your paycheck now. So
exactly.
That's a good. Good. So I forgot if you were with us on Monday, I mentioned that there are alternative coffee cups to the Up North News one, excuse me. And the one yesterday, in case you, I'm sure people were looking like, what is that? That's the one that says, I am silently correcting your grammar, which, you know, it's just one of those things you gave a journalist. So such fun. I will talk about the Brewers in a moment. I'm putting off that disappointment as long as possible. But those of you watching the video feed on Facebook or Twitter, you've probably noticed the Brewers shirt that I'm wearing, and it is no regular Brewers jersey or t-shirt. We have gone with the full-blown Hawaiian shirt with the Brewers logo. It is our answer to casual Fridays on this program. I now decree this show shall be the home of Dad Shirt Fridays. I have acquired many shirts that in my 20s and 30s would have horrified me to learn would one day populate my closet, but there are enough of them now for this former TV anchor who used to wear a suit and tie every day and now hasn't worn a suit and tie in forever, is hereby declaring Dad Shirt Friday to be a thing here in Wisconsin. So Luke, for somebody still in their 20s, I apologize in advance.
No worries, but do I have to be a father to participate in future Dad Shirt Fridays?
Oh no, anybody can wear a dad shirt at any point. That's the thing.
I'm a godfather, so I'm not a dad yet, but I am a godfather to my nephew, who will be 4 soon, and I have acquired a few because I've developed, even in my late 20s, I've developed a little eclectic taste for some of those kooky shirts or whatever. A kooky can sometimes be mean, but I like those shirts too.
I think part of it, I mean, for all kinds of reasons, obviously, but I always think of the Charlie Sheen character, Charlie Harper on 2 1/2 Men, who always had like the bowling shirt, which is not something, you know, that I typically wear, but it's again, kind of in that, you know, why do you have to wear the same regular thing all the time? Earlier in the summer, I shared this on social media about how Facebook and Twitter and the others are always listening in, you know, every little keystroke. And I'm actually okay with that much of the time. It's called predictive marketing. But sometimes it's a little creepy that you don't even have to type it in. You just have to talk about it. And suddenly you're seeing ads for something. Well, I had seen on either MLB.com or one of the others, you know, some of these island themed shirts for all your favorite teams. Clicked on one of them. Then noticed as I was scrolling through Instagram, not that much later on, every 4 posts or so was another ad, and they weren't all for the same place. They were all for different shirt manufacturers and, you know, so different themes. And most of them were sports related, but not all of them. And I was like, okay, you guys got to modify this a bit. If you predictive marketing has its point, but you know, and especially if you use the interwebs to buy a gift for somebody. If I'm buying, you know, some kind of a gift for my mom for Mother's Day, it doesn't mean that I'm going to want, you know, pancake spatulas all the time, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I actually did get my mom something better than a pancake spatula, but not much. So to get to the Brewers, they lost again on a walk-off in Pittsburgh and got swept by the lowly Pirates. They once again had an early lead, gave it up, fought their way back, and then managed to lose. They took the lead in the 10th inning on a hit by pitch. Would have been great. And then they lost it in the bottom of the 10th on a wild pitch. So earlier this week, the Brewers led the NL Central by 4 games over the Cardinals. Now the Brewers have lost 4 in a row. The Cards have won 4 in a row, and we are tied. And that seems appropriate because the Brewers are back home tonight to start a series with Cincinnati, and they are marking the 40th anniversary of the 1982 team that played in the World Series to the Cardinals and lost to the Cardinals. So hopefully there's some reverse karma coming later in the season here at some point. I'm still just having a tough time believing that it has been 40 years. But time marches on. Hey, I know we advertised that my colleague Christina Laurie was going to be joining us this morning. Something has come up that required her to spend a little extra time with a group that she volunteers with. And since we are very pro public service and volunteer service here, we will get her on next week. So up next, someone Christina interviewed recently for a story, a pretty intense story about abortion and how we really should be handling this matter. We'll be right back. You're up north. Welcome back to Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. To follow us through our daily newsletter, go to upnorthnewswi.com and click on newsletter in the top banner. It's something that I put out each weekday afternoon with a summary of stories that we're working on at Up North News. There was a story that we did last month, an intensely personal story that we did about a woman in Chippewa Falls and what she went through a year ago, well before the U.S. Supreme Court inserted itself even deeper into the lives of women and their physicians by repealing the abortion protections in Roe versus Wade. And we are very thankful that Heather Martell was willing to share that story with us. She's been sharing it elsewhere as well. We'll talk about why that is, but she joins us this morning for a little while. Heather, thank you so much for joining us. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. To get into this, Heather, I think perhaps the best way to start this is right away to go after a myth that is still being perpetuated and honestly still being perpetuated right now. I guess I shouldn't say myth because it's not 100% of the time, but you know, bear with me here. That people, especially late term abortions, are being used as some sort of form of birth control. As you put it so well in your story, oh, I'm 5 months pregnant. I don't feel like being pregnant anymore. It doesn't work that way. And yet late term abortion was the real boogeyman that kind of set the scene for Roe v. Wade to eventually be repealed. But abortion stories like yours usually are the result of tragic circumstances that begin in the happiest circumstances, a pregnancy that you wanted. So having set the scene for that, tell us about, how your pregnancy story began over a year ago.
Sure. First, I want to address the term late term abortion. That's mm-hmm. political nonsense. That's not an actual medical term. I had a second trimester abortion. My husband and I had been trying to conceive since we got married in 2015. We went through some really invasive testing and were basically told by my OB, sorry, guys, not likely going to happen for you. IVF and intrauterine IUI wouldn't likely help us conceive. So we spent the next 6 years just going about life under the impression that, hey, I'm not going to get pregnant. And then I got pregnant. Surprise, surprise. It was totally unplanned. None of my pregnancies have ever been planned, but it was a very happy surprise. We were thrilled. But I had had a feeling throughout the entire pregnancy that something wasn't right, that something just felt off. So I was on my OB to get the early testing. I advocated for myself. I was saying, hey, something just doesn't feel right. Can we get early genetic testing done? So we did that. We did that at 8 or 10 weeks, and it came back normal. I asked for other testing, but because the early blood test came back normal, my doctor said, you know, the other tests aren't as reliable as the blood test. Don't worry about it. Your insurance isn't going to cover an amnio because you're not 35 yet, which is an arbitrary number. And your blood panel came back normal. Okay, fine. We had early testing at ultrasounds at 8 weeks, and at about 15, 16 weeks. And then I requested that we have the anatomical ultrasound at 18 weeks instead of 20 weeks in Wisconsin. I know your wife is an OB, so she can probably tell you this too. Most anatomical testing or ultrasounds are done at 20 weeks here in Wisconsin, just because of the size of everything and the development. You're looking at really, really small organs that are still forming. So 20 weeks, you get a little bit better picture. But I knew that something just wasn't right. And I knew that Wisconsin at that point, the cutoff for abortion was 20 weeks. So I wanted to get in sooner so I would have that time to make any decisions if anything had to be made. Our 18-week anatomical ultrasound, we couldn't see anything because he was curled up into a ball and he wouldn't move around. So we came back a week later thinking, okay, he's got to move around a little bit and be in a different position. We come back a week later and we're in the room with the ultrasound tech for maybe 10 minutes. She takes a 3D ultrasound photo of his spine, really quick, looks at his heart and does a quick sweep of his belly trying to find kidneys and runs out of the room. And when she comes back, she is really quiet and she says, a nurse is going to bring you back to the doctor. Right. Our doctor was at a different clinic that day. So we spoke to a different doctor, one that we didn't know. And she, as soon as we were in that room, as soon as the ultrasound tech left, I knew what was coming, not the extent, but just that this isn't good news. Mm-hmm. I kind of knew what she was looking at because this wasn't my first baby. This wasn't my first pregnancy. So I knew something was wrong with the spine. Something was wrong with the heart, and she left really quick. So this isn't going to be good. Right. We got into the little exam room. Doctor came in, said, I'm sorry. And I kind of just went into shock. I didn't hear anything else. But after that, we went to Marshfield Clinic in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. To have a level 2 ultrasound, which is more detailed, more intense of an ultrasound. It's not something that you do unless you see something in the first ultrasound, that anatomy ultrasound. At that appointment, we were seen by a maternal fetal medicine specialist, an amazing doctor. And we were seen by a pediatric cardiologist. We had a fetal echocardiogram. Try saying that five times fast. Both were amazing at their jobs, top of their game. Wonderful, wonderful doctors. At this appointment, we found out the extent of what was wrong. Eventually, we got a catch-all diagnosis called Vectrals Association. So what we found out during this ultrasound was that he had at least two deformed and misshapen vertebrae on his thoracic spine at the upper and the lower portions of his thoracic. Mm-hmm. And this caused spinal cord damage, which made him paralyzed. We had never felt him kick. We learned that his heart had a VSD, which is a hole, and it was rather significant. A VSD on its own, you can survive that. They can operate. Then we found out that his aortic arteries were actually deformed. He was missing his kidney, and his other kidney was undersized. And he had something called rocker bottom feet on both of his feet. So his feet were actually shaped like rocking chair bottoms.
The odds were stacked against him from very early on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And again, as you'd said, to Christina for the story, any one of those things, because I can already hear people saying, well, babies are born with problems all the time and doctors are wonderful and science is amazing. But it's not always like that. And especially when you have this many things going on, Heather. So your concern, your ultimate concern was what your baby would be feeling as its nervous system developed and could feel things later in pregnancy. And then of course, what his early minutes, hours, or life would have been like. And this was not guesswork. You again, talking to your doctors, knew what he would have gone through.
Yes. Yes. And at that point, I was also experiencing fetal seizures, which are extremely rare. So he was already seizing. His prognosis was not compatible with life. He had a chance of being born, but he would be born in excruciating pain. Anybody with a spinal cord injury can tell you about that. I mean, and this was bigger than just like a slip disc. And
yeah, this is anybody who's had a newborn and if your newborn or infant or even toddler is in pain and can't really tell you what is hurting, it is heartbreaking. And especially if there's nothing you can do right away for that pain. Now imagine that as, 24/7. Right. I mean, that's
from before he's even born.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in that we've got about 2 minutes here before break, and then we're going to talk throughout another segment here. So I guess we'll take this short time before the break just to lead into what the decision ultimately was, and then we'll talk more about it afterwards. But you received information from medical professionals, and then you and your husband, let's just start with what you did decide, and then we'll talk more about the reasoning behind it. But how does this chapter of the story end, I guess?
At that appointment, we kind of went in thinking there were things wrong, but maybe we could fix them. We didn't go in thinking, okay, we're going to schedule an abortion after this. It was, how can we mitigate these circumstances? But by the end of the appointment, it was, how do we get a referral to Planned Parenthood?
Yeah. And based again on the information, and it's not, again, to attack another one of these myths, you weren't coerced into or bullied into making this decision.
No. My doctors never even mentioned abortion. They said, do you want to talk about your options? I said, yes. How do I go about getting a referral to Planned Parenthood?
Yeah. And for those reasons that we'll talk more about in just a couple of minutes here. But the important thing for everybody to note here is that these painful discoveries and then the information, the scientific, science-based information that went back and forth and the decision that was ultimately made, at no point had a politician involved. At no point had a government mandate, and most importantly, did not have a government ban involved that would say, no, you have to, we are going to force you to have this pregnancy and the resulting hell that results. Heather Martell is our guest. We'll be back with more after this. This is Up North News.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We're back with Heather Martell on Up North News for this Friday morning, and we are talking about abortion and abortion care and the right to privacy on which abortion rights are based before it was stripped away by the U.S. Supreme Court this year. Before we went to break, Heather, I was talking about government not getting in the way of your intensely personal decision, learning just how much pain your son would be in and making that decision. But you corrected me during the break to say that actually government was already interfering even with that decision here in the state of Wisconsin.
Yes. In the state of Wisconsin, you cannot. Last year in the state of Wisconsin, you couldn't have an abortion post 20 weeks. So we wound up having an abortion at 22 weeks, 6 days. We were reproductive refugees. We had to leave our state, and we barely made the cutoff for the Minnesota deadline.
And in doing so, traveling to a clinic where, again, you're already in shock and whatnot, and you're not, as I'm sure, as nice and professional as the people were inside the clinic. To get there, you had to deal with all kinds of strangers who knew nothing about you or your condition.
Yes. I think that was when it really hit me. The protesters who were outside of Planned Parenthood in St. Paul. There was one man who was screaming, "Don't do this. You have options down the road." And oh my God,
he didn't know that. He didn't. He couldn't have known what those options were like. Yeah.
If there had been any option, I would have found it already. And this was our best option. Our son was weeks away from feeling the worst pain anyone could fathom. He was having fetal seizures. Anybody who's ever had a seizure can, tell you that's painful. It's not fun. And he was already having them before his nervous system was fully connected.
So you're making this decision and having to go through a throng of protesters who know nothing for all of this. At the heart of this decision, Heather, is love, basically, yes, for your son. And this was something that you, and especially your husband, to get to that point, that this was an act of mercy, this is an act of love. Again, that didn't happen instantly. That was a real journey.
Yes. I think for me personally, I've always been pro-choice. When I was a teenager, I kind of, thought about the what ifs. I think every woman, from the time she starts menstruating, has that internal dialogue. What if? Where do I draw the line when it comes to pregnancy and abortion? If I'm pregnant and it's my life or the baby's, where do I draw that line? That's something that we all think about as reproductive people. So for me as a teenager, I drew a line in the sand and I said, if my fetus, unborn baby, pick whatever word you want. If that baby is suffering, that's when abortion is going to be what I do.
which again is not something isolated. These are pregnancy is never certain, as you've said earlier, just getting pregnant, but then pregnancy itself, there is the percentage of people who have the Norman Rockwell version of pregnancy, God bless them, but there are people every single day who have to go through these, gut-wrenching decisions based on what their child will suffer through. And we should make clear, this is your child. You're a mother at this point. People tend to think that you're thinking, oh, this is just some, clump of cells or whatnot. You're making a choice for your son. Whenever life began, you're making that choice as a parent.
Yes. The letter that I wrote to all of our legislators in the state of Wisconsin, I said, listen, I don't care when life begins. I don't know when life begins. That's not my thing. My thing is motherhood. Motherhood begins when that pregnancy test turns positive. That's when you become a mom. Whether or not you advance further into motherhood, that's the mother's choice. At positive pregnancy test, you are a mother and you are ultimately doing what is best for your family, including your unborn child or fetus or however you want to phrase it. And I'm basically begging the legislator saying, hey, back off, let mothers be mothers. Let us make the medical choices.
And yet you did that. And I'm going to single out one in particular, the state assembly rep for up here in the Bloomer area, Rob Summerfield. You ended up talking to him on the phone. What was that conversation like?
It was like spitting in the wind. Mm-hmm. It did not matter what I said to him. His personal religious beliefs and his paranoia that I was recording our conversation were at the top of his mind. He was more concerned about whether or not I was going public with what we were talking about because trust was important to him. He was paranoid that I was recording the conversation because he didn't want the conversation to get out, that he first said that he was upholding the will of the people and then in the same breath turned around and said, but I make choices based on my religious faith.
And in the end, said he would do something different if he were in your shoes.
Yes. He said that if he were in my shoes, he would have continued the pregnancy and prayed that the doctors, the specialists, the people who have spent the majority of their lives, their professional careers, researching, learning, diagnosing, treating these conditions, he would pray that they were wrong. And in the meantime, let Oliver suffer.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, in that same vein of pray the gay away. You can't pray away, the medical conditions that led you to this choice. But again, of course, I don't expect that Representative Summerfield is going to change his mind, based on that phone call or on this radio interview. I have been in the caucus room with fellow state legislators, and I can barely contain the rage I felt when, people in that caucus room said they were going to vote on something the way they were because that's what their bishop wanted or, some other religious leader. It is not, how Americans should decide policy for everybody of every faith, of every belief system. But this is what we have in this era, and now we have the Supreme Court decision. And that in and of itself answers this question. But when we talk about why it's important to share stories, we've talked with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, an OBGYN from the Green Bay area, and others who have already shared stories about what has happened to women since then, just in the past, month or so with uncontrolled bleeding and things like that. And I think it's in part because these stories weren't necessarily shared. You have shared your story here widely already. You don't have to. You didn't have to. Why? Why are you sharing it?
When I went to Planned Parenthood. I went there with little knowledge. I had asked friends and family, and nobody was really willing to tell me, what does abortion look like? What is this? Because everything that you read online is kind of propaganda one way or the other. And I had a family member private message me and say, hey, this is what my abortion looked like. Please don't tell anybody because nobody knows. And that hit me. That really struck me because I didn't know what to expect going in. So how could anybody else? And then that made me think of our politicians. How many of them only know the propaganda that they've been force-fed since birth? So I want to be transparent with my story and my experience because courage is contagious. I tell my story and I've had other women have come forward because I have told my story. And that's how we normalize it. I mean, how did we get to gay marriage? Just in my lifetime, in my 35 years, we went from you have a funny uncle who's a lifelong bachelor to that's so awesome. He's getting married and, you know, think nothing of it. We do that by normalizing the conversation. We did that because Ellen DeGeneres was like, yeah, I'm gay. So what? We need to start doing that with abortion.
And much like same-sex relationships and such, it's much more prevalent than one would think. Statistics show that 1 in 4 women before they turn 45 will have an abortion. I'm going to say that again because I know some people did double take. 1 in 4 women before they turn 45 will have an abortion. It is not abnormal. It is a part of decisions made by women, by families, in consultation with medical professionals. You mentioned something earlier in our conversation about how the doctors and the other healthcare professionals were at the top of their game when you talked to them. Complete professionals, not advocating, but informing. I certainly get the impression they wouldn't be able to do that if government is always, you know, tapping on their shoulder or, you know, the church is tapping on their shoulder, that we're not going to have nearly the level of care that we should expect to have in the United States.
Yeah. As it was last year, doctors really didn't say, hey, let's talk abortion. They just kind of said, do you want to talk about your options? I had never had an OB say, so let's get you scheduled for that abortion. Should we? You know, that's not something that was even going on, whether or not that's government or religion or what have you. It wasn't happening. Now with this traumatic government overreach into healthcare and the fabric of families, you're going to have doctors who are going to be scared to treat for miscarriages, for stillbirths, if Oliver would have died in utero, at 22 weeks, instead of having the feticide and then the abortion, I still would have had to leave the state to have him removed from my body at 22 weeks.
Yeah.
And that was last year.
Yeah. Yep. And now we have people on the ballot who have pledged to make things even worse. For example, Wisconsin has this ban from 1849, that has exceptions for the life of the mother, but it's worded in such a way from, you know, the 1800s that it's not entirely clear what constitutes that. There is no exception for rape or incest, you know, whether it's a result of domestic violence or what have you.
Pat, let me go into something there. In the state of Wisconsin, rapists still have parental rights of their children. That is in the family code. Mm-hmm. If you have a child that's a product of sexual assault, the man who sires that child can still have parental rights and shared custody and placement in Wisconsin.
And that is, I mean, that's an obscenity that has to be addressed as well as so many other things. Heather Martell, I cannot thank you enough for sharing your story with us and wish you all the best moving forward. Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right. Heather Martell was our guest here. We will take a break and we will wrap up this hour in just a moment. Welcome back to Up North News. This song that's being played, the title of it is called Mother Freedom. I haven't heard the song in 30 plus years, which kind of surprises me because I listen to a lot of classic rock. I know a lot. I'm not like Luke here where I know who the drummer is on every band, but I normally at least know title and artist. I mean, as you can tell from the dad shirt that we've got here, I'm a regular listener to Yacht Rock as well. I know my tunes from that era. So when I heard the song, first off, I thought, I used to hear that song all the time, like wall to wall. I never hear it anymore. And then came that horrific discovery. I didn't know who did it. I couldn't think back. I'm like, is this, you know, Bachman Turner Overdrive? Is this Three Dog Night? Is this, you know, Alice Cooper? You know, who is this? And I looked it up this morning. It's Bread. Bread, the soft rock group that gave you Baby I'ma Want You and Aubrey and I Found Her Diary Underneath a Tree. They did that first. And it just reminds you that so many bands, you know, start out as rock bands, you know, a bunch of guys were like, yeah, we're gonna rock. And then they realized there's money to be made in love songs. And, you know, so the Doobie Brothers went to Michael McDonald, you know, and Chicago went with what's his name? David Foster, and went to all, you know, all soft rock tunes instead of the trumpets. Luke, I'm putting you on the spot, but I'm wondering if that is still a phenomenon we still see today where people are like all rockers when they start and then suddenly you start hearing nothing but soft stuff out of them.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily soft stuff now that the transition comes to, but it's definitely more poppy. Like it's, you'll hear artists start, like some of my favorite albums are like alternative rock band's first or second album, and then once they make album number like 4 or 5, it really starts to get into some of the poppier stuff where they want to make it mainstream. They got big audiences and they just get more of a poppy twang to it then, because that's where the money is.
Well, you know who I think of, and this isn't like completely modern, we're going back more than a decade now, but Rob Thomas. You know, Matchbox 20, you know, that was a lot of, you know, in your face kind of stuff. And then he had that song with some, you know, some trumpets, you know, If You're Gone, some soft horns. And, you know, so he realizes too that, you know, there's money in love, you know.
Yeah, I think Maroon 5 did that too. Maroon 5 was a real,
band. I was thinking that might be the case as well. Yeah. So, you know, we all have a soft spot. Much like the soft spot that Tim Michaels has for Donald Trump for when he comes to Wisconsin today. And I learned this morning that when Donald Trump comes to Wisconsin today, this will be his first trip to the state, stumping for Tim Michaels, since his presidency. In other words, his first visit here since the insurrection. And so I ask this in all seriousness. Is there any chance at all that Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call could meet him at the airport with court papers? Handcuffs would be too much to ask for. But, you know, for that whole, you know, coup that he had planned and conspired, the thing that included fraudulent electors from Wisconsin. You would want to see that.
We don't even know, though, if the 10 fraudulent electors have been, like, served subpoenas and things like that to show up before a grand jury yet. And I have a feeling that we would need to hear from them before those steps get taken when Trump touches down here in Wisconsin.
I don't know. I think that sometimes, you know, you get the, instead of the bank robbery, you start with the people in who drove the getaway car. And sometimes it's the mastermind who never specifically said, and this is what kills me. And I believe Tim Michels said something like this earlier in the week, that he, you know, Donald Trump never directly ordered, you know, an insurrection to take place. That's how this works. I mean, and frankly, if you need to hear Donald Trump say, I'm going to shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue before you would, you know, charge him after seeing him shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue, you're not an apologist for him. You're an accessory at this point. And that's what you have in somebody who has the audacity, as reported by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today, the audacity to criticize Rebecca Clefish, his primary opponent next week, for not being supportive enough of Donald Trump in 2016, when it's been discovered Tim Michels didn't even vote in the Wisconsin primary in 2016.
That's because he didn't live here. I mean,
because he didn't live here. He said, let me find the quote here, he said, I missed the primary, but I didn't miss the movement, he said in a statement. Michels said he missed the primary because of, quote, a sudden unforeseen major issue on the big Michels Corporation construction project in New York.
Yeah, it was that he was living in New York. That was the unforeseen, yeah.
And you know, frankly, risked voter fraud. You know, he continued to vote in Wisconsin when he remembered to. But he didn't vote for Trump in the 2016 primary because he didn't vote in Wisconsin at all.
Well, it's really easy to remember the major elections when all states go to the polls, say in November, but it's a little harder to keep track of a primary halfway across the country in a state when you're spending a lot of your time in New York and Connecticut. So
yeah, but although it's not like the 2016 Wisconsin primary, you know, happened underground. You know, people knew about it. This was, you again, to take you back, Scott Walker got out of his very, 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 very short presidential campaign and said, you know, this party needs to stop Trump from taking over the party. And Trump and Trump did not win in the Wisconsin primaries, Ted Cruz, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, so for Tim Michels to say, oh, I would have voted for him if I were there. You weren't here. You didn't vote. You said not a week ago, you said that you couldn't commit to supporting Trump if he were the 2024 nominee. You said you were way too focused on this year and your election. And as soon as you heard Trump would come and stump for you, you switched that answer on a dime and said, oh, of course I would. You also said, you know, that decertification of the 2020 election, which again is not a thing. You said not a week ago, you said it's not a priority for you. Then you heard Trump was coming on your behalf, and suddenly your story changed again, that yes, decertification is absolutely on the table. And don't get me wrong, it was going to be anyway. If Tim Michels is elected governor and Republicans still control the legislature, it will happen, no matter how much Tim Michels would try to downplay it, because it's no different than what Scott Walker and Rebecca Clefish did in 2014. When there were rumblings that Wisconsin Republicans wanted to pass, you know, so-called right to work, you know, which is just another, you know, union bashing legislation. And Scott Walker said, oh, it's not a priority for me. It's a distraction. Well, he wins re-election. The legislature passed it, and he couldn't fall over himself fast enough to sign that bill into law. So don't think for a moment that's not what Tim Michels would do if he's elected, and listen to that kind of conversation today with Donald Trump. In our next hour, Cam Stevenson from the Arizona Copper Courier will join us to talk about all the pro-Trumpers who won on the ballot there and what that could mean for democracy moving forward. This is Up North News.